What's up, badass Asian dudes? I am super excited to be here. My name is Victor Ong. I am a cannabis wellness and emotional intelligence coach with the Badass Asian Dudes. And I have two other co-hosts with me, Brandon and Nick. You two want to say hi real quick?
Yeah, I'll go real quick. I'm Nick. I'm super excited to be here. I'm an engineering manager at Medium. Used to work at a cannabis company too, actually. He's over in California, but these days I find myself focused much more on emotional intelligence, the EM role over at Medium, the blogging company.
Hey, what's up, badass Asian dudes? I'm Brandon. I'm an Olympic weightlifting and flexibility coach. I'm also a big fan of recreational and responsible use of psychedelics, as well as emotional intelligence and just overall weirdo. So I'm happy to be talking with John here and just letting you guys know that we have fun things to talk about right now. So
we do so much good stuff. And again, all of us are super excited to have on as our guest, John Kim here, super badass Korean American dude, author of I Used to Be a Miserable Fuck, co-founder of Journey, tattoo ridden, motorcycle riding, skateboard and ex therapist who you might know as the Angry Therapist. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. You guys had me at Badass Asian. When I heard the title, I was like, oh my God, I gotta do that. Can I ask you guys what ethnicity you are specifically?
Yeah, I am Chinese.
You're Chinese, right?
I'm Korean American.
Okay, nice.
Chinese.
Oh.
We got a 50-50 split.
Yeah, we got like checkers going on here. Two Koreans. And I'm assuming I'm obviously the oldest in the group. And, you know, I grew up in the 80s when Asians weren't cool. I got lucky, but most of my friends got made fun of and beat up and all that. And if we told people we were starting a group called Badass Asian Dudes, man, we would have gotten our ass kicked.
It would be like, you're going to do some Bruce Lee moves? Yeah, what you going to do, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. No. And we're super excited to have you on to talk more about that too. Being a podcast for and by Badass Asian Dudes, we actually like to ask all of our guests to start off, what does being a badass Asian dude mean to you?
Man, I'm going to start by saying it doesn't involve martial arts as an Asian American. I think badass to me means having the courage to live authentically, you know, live a life that's meaningful to you, being okay with not falling into stereotypes, right? And also being Asian American, at least from my generation, we have a lot of pressure from parents to, be the lawyer, be the doctor, go to school. I had a lot of pushback when I wanted to buy a motorcycle or get tattoos, even marrying outside of my race and then getting a divorce. So I've also been a C student. So I pretty much lived everything that was the nightmare of an Asian American parent. So having the courage to be yourself. I think that, to me, that's badass.
I love that. I love that. And we get into, and you talk a lot about that in your book. I Used to Be a Miserable Fuck. And it's super cool that you're just so like real about it, you know? And I think hearing your story from being a therapist and almost leaving that world to almost search for that authenticity, like what was that journey like?
So that started 10 years ago, and the divorce forced me to start all over. And I was broke, had no money, no friends. My life revolved around my wife and my definition of happy, which I was just kind of chasing. And at the time I was a screenwriter. When I decided to become a therapist and then I got a divorce, that's what like shook my life at a sketch. And the double-edged sword is that it's hard, it's difficult, and I was going through a broken heart. But at the same time, when you're at that kind of low, the beauty of it is you can start completely all over. You know, a lot of people who have success, it's hard for them to start over because, you know, they're comfortable, or a lot of people who are financially established or, you know, already have communities and stuff. But man, at that point I was 35, I had nothing. So you kind of become fearless when you have nothing to lose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was that? Like, what was the thing that made you decide, I got to turn it inward and stop kind of blaming outside circumstances and people for your situation?
Again, it was basically losing my marriage, not having a sense of purpose, not having friends, having just 10 years of grinding as a screenwriter, and just getting to a point where I was like, man, what am I going to do now? Like, I'm done. And I start to look inward. So instead of chasing shiny things, because I ran a restaurant bar club in Hollywood for a while, and I was very into, you know, everything that's external. So like the things, the cars, the, you know, whatever, women, houses in the hills. And also just, you know, being raised in LA, I just was programmed to chase that. And when I became a therapist, it forced me to look inward, to kind of do a self inventory, self examination. And I just listened to that. And that was the beginning. That was the first domino. Yeah. I still like things. I still like things. But
we all do.
Yeah. And I think it's okay. Like, I want to, you know, I want a house in the hills and a collection of motorcycles and all that. But, you know, I think that those are like the byproduct of living a life that's meaningful, of making your dent. That's not the, that's not the thing, right? That's not what's going to make you happy. Those are just things that ripple from, you running toward your true north.
Yeah. Yeah. And it almost sounds like you kind of had to experience that too, to really like understand, okay, maybe there is this search for something that isn't completely satisfying or fulfilling me. And I wonder, because a lot of our listeners are maybe in that stage where, actually, I think you might have mentioned something around a lot of men not really having this a coming of age sort of phase, right? To be able to go through certain things and really have an experience that helps them, you know, shift a more meaningful part of their life. Like, how do you, I guess, how would you, for those who maybe don't have that, you know, is there a way to really invoke that for ourselves, or maybe like, you know, create that situation where we can, we don't have to like force ourselves to be in this, like, you know, to force ourselves to have a divorce or like, you know, like do all these things in order to learn how to better improve. Like,
I mean, I think it's different for everyone. And I don't know where you guys are at in your life. But I think every man, every guy goes from boy to man, they cross that great divide, and it requires usually something. So like, you know, if you're an addict hitting rock bottom, you know, a broken heart, an expired relationship, a divorce, like maybe losing something, a career. You know, there's a lot of people, a lot of Asians who are successful fast because they went to school and got good grades and they're high achievers. And then they crash, you know, maybe in finance or in law. And they're like, this is not who I am. This is, I'm miserable. So it usually takes something like that where you are going from comfortable to uncomfortable, and you enter your hero's journey. You know, you slay dragons and you do the whole thing, and you come back to the village changed. I think that it should be required, but it's the universe that kind of sets that up for us, depending on our story. It'd be amazing if, like, after college, you go to this like school that becomes a catalyst to, you
know, university, something like that.
Right, exactly.
Oh, I've totally dreamed of that too. Like, where, you know, you start to look at how we followed someone else's true north, because that's just how we all grow up, right? Yeah. Someone gives us, like, they give you the best information to go get something good for yourself, but it's always like 2 degrees off. And when we go to that, the end of what someone recommends for us, and we're like, this is not a good feeling, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And also, as an Asian American, and I don't know about you guys, I'm obviously older. My parents came to America with no money, so I didn't get, you know, this idea of emotional intelligence. They don't know what the fuck that is. Like, it was survival mode, you know. Yeah. It was my mom working in a convenience store for 14 hours a day and getting held up and, you know, making egg rolls and selling burgers and stuff like that for years. And then my dad pulling telephone cable, you know, and then also dad being an alcoholic, a functioning alcoholic, just not really there emotionally. Right. Mm-hmm. So I never had a dad who taught me how to play baseball. I never had a dad who took me camping, any of that stuff. they were busy trying to buy us Levi's and cool skateboards. And so I grew up, but pop culture raised me, right? And I learned early on that if you were good at something, then you could fit in. And because I wasn't good at school, I was like, okay. And I had a thirst for, you know, adventure. I was like, well, I'm going to break dance. I'm going to skate. I'm going to do these other things. And I hopefully this is not the case now, but when I was growing up, the cool kids only let in one Asian guy. There was only one badass Asian guy.
Yeah, the token Asian guy, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah. And and your ticket in was, it wasn't because you got girls, because girls didn't like Asian guys then. It was an ability, you know, or maybe your family had money. It was something, right? Or maybe you're funny or whatever. And so I just got really lucky, and I was that guy that got in. And so I never got picked on, but I know around me, you know, we Asian dudes were always, yeah, they were forced to go do their own thing. But I also grew up in a very white world, and I know it's very different now.
Isn't LA, so you grew up in a part of LA just that didn't have a lot of Asian kids there? Because I know LA these days has a ton of Asian representation. Yeah. When you grew up in the 80s there?
Yeah, man, I wish I grew up, you know, post Fast and Furious, post now, because
yeah,
and now I know people who are like, they only like Asian people, or you know, stuff like that. But when I grew up, man, it wasn't that far. When I grew up, where Jerry Lewis was taping his eyes back, you know, it wasn't that far. I mean, I grew up with the John Hughes movies in the '80s, and there was a character named Long Duk Dong, and
we know,
it's a total like geek, and yeah, all that shit, man. We weren't portrayed in media. And I don't even think we are yet, right? I think we're getting there. But we weren't portrayed as like, you know, cool, sexy, all of that. But I know now, I do know now, I have friends and also female friends who like only date Asian guys. Like now we've kind of like, I think are starting to become more, you know, acceptable and commercial.
Yellow fever.
Definitely getting there, but there's like, you know, the fact that like a lot of Asian guys still get mad about William Hung's of the world makes us think like we're not all the way there, right? Because if you're talking about like a random white comedian doing what William Hung did, that would be like, oh, that's just a random guy, not a random white guy. And that's why the William Hung example, a lot of people get hung up on that, because they still think like we don't have enough representation for us to not be that one monolith, you know? It was interesting.
What do you think it's going to take? Wait, so how old are you, Nick?
I'm 32.
32, and then how old are you, Brandon?
I'm 36.
Oh, okay. So you guys are in your 30s. And Vic, what about you?
30.
Oh, you guys are all in your 30s. Okay, cool. Yeah. What do you guys think it's gonna take for Asian men to cross over, right? Because it's different with Asian women. You know, Asian women, because of the whole like fetish and you know, they've always been sexualized and all that, right?
Honestly, I have a lot of hope in the way international world is treating Asian men these days. I don't know about the U.S., how long it's going to take in there, but like, you know, the rise of K-pop, the rise of like these Chinese superstars that are like very masculine in their own way in China. And I think like that sort of thing will hopefully be a beacon for the rest of the West to kind of like eventually move towards. I just don't really see it happening in the U.S. too often, because like all these movies I'm thinking about, some of them were like, obviously, like, what is it? Was a really big movie that came out? You know,
Crazy Rich Asians?
Yeah, Crazy Rich Asians. That was like West targeted, but it was from Singapore. It was about Singapore, you know? I think it's going to take a couple more of those where like, it just turns out it's just not weird for an Asian guy to be a romantic lead. Not even controversial. It's just like, of course, it's a flavor of romantic, not like a weird choice, right? And that I still think that's like 10, 20 years out. It's going to be a little bit, I think, in my mind.
That's a long time. Yeah, I mean, we still don't have like an Asian James Bond or an Asian, you know, whatever, heartthrob or a leading man, that kind of thing.
So, John, I know you're into fitness and CrossFit. So this is sort of a newish thing, but like you probably tried Olympic weightlifting, right?
Yeah, for sure. I'm not into it as much as I was, but I was into it when it first came out and when they were in alleyways flipping tires and shit. And I was like, wow, what's going on here? But I was,
about badass, right?
9 years ago, I was really into it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so when China started to dominate the weightlifting scene, that's the first time I'd ever seen like a superstar, buff Asian guy, like where people were like, holy shit, he is commanding respect. And I was like, but that wasn't 10 years ago. Like no one cared about that before.
Right. That's recent.
Fitness, I think, is a huge avenue for a lot of guys to not only prove themselves, but be represented like their face.
Yes, that's actually a really interesting comment, because I think there's a lot of Asian athletes, man. And I think that even though we don't play football, but we're coming in through like weightlifting, other kind of sports. And yeah, I think that might be a good door to enter, right? Maybe it's not going to be the blockbuster, but maybe, maybe it's going to be other things like that. And of course, obviously dancing, you know, K-pop, all that stuff is,
Well, and I love that too, in that, you know, there's that physical approach we can take, the fitness, the physical appearance, the attractiveness there. I think what is less talked about is the more emotional side.
Yeah.
Really building ourselves up internally and really like really showing our own authenticity and being proud of that, being assertive with that. I think a lot of like I can definitely relate to the Asian guys who maybe absorbed a lot of that narrative from the limited representation that we had, that like, maybe this is the only way to be, or you know, or whatnot. So to really then find ourselves and really our own truth, I think that's a really good way to then start having other people see that like this is they're their own person and they're proud of that as well.
Yeah. Are there any Asian, I mean, of course there's Asian therapists, but are there any Asian people, authors writing self-help books besides myself, males? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. There definitely are. And I can't think of them right now, but if I know there are, we should definitely find them and bring them onto the podcast.
Yeah. I mean, that's also, I mean, behind every one of them, there's going to be an interesting story, right?
Yeah. I think we want to get into the space ourselves. Like these two are like actual, like Victor as an emotional health coach. I'm seeing this guy, I want to see him write a book on this sort of topic too. Right. Yeah. And like, I've been super helped by people like him and Gavin who does a thing that's called Flow Masters. So I think there's definitely an interesting space of Asian men that are starting to build up here and we're starting to support each other. And that's actually where we really want to take Badass Asian Dudes, right. To like, not just have a place to talk about on Facebook for all these random topics, but really be like, hey, not just like interesting topics that are coming up, but we can really support each other and really like show each other a better way to be around our race and the way we are that is uplifting and really powerful. Because like what we're talking about with the Asian male representation, that's on us. We have to be so badass in what we do that like we just start show up in the world no matter what people are thinking about us and come off and just show them this is how we can be. You know?
I love that answer. It's actually really needed. And especially in places like Korea where there's a lot of toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, absolutely. I love the flag you guys are waving. I think it's important. And also you guys are at a really good time where I think people are going to be open and responding to it instead of, you know, not wanting to be a part of it or, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we hope so. If anybody is listening to this, please do reach out. But back to, I think the topics though around like what could an Asian man for themselves do to become their own version of badass in your opinion, like especially those that maybe didn't have those models. I know you actually worked with a lot of children in your earlier days who you found didn't really have that positive father figure as well. So maybe those who don't have that, or maybe a model that is more emotionally available, what can someone in that situation do for themselves to be able to create their own badass?
Yeah, I think, and it's not just Asian men, I think it's all men, I mean, if you really break it down to like, it's, you know, a simplicity, to respond instead of react, right? That's one of the ones that I really, because I used to be very reactive and very angry, to try to understand before trying to understand, before trying to be understood, right? Have you guys heard of the four stages? And I talk about this a lot. There's
I love
to me, by me, for me, and through me.
For me,
That's in your book.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah,
yeah, and I think a lot of men in general. I actually don't think they're men. I think they're boys with a lot of wounds. But also culturally, especially Asian, because of machismo and all that. They're in the by me or the to me, which is the like the low frequencies, right? Which is basic. By me is basically iron fist. You know, it's a lot of testosterone. It's my way or the highway. To me is victim mode, right? Creating your own prison because you feel that you're a victim in this world. But I don't see a lot of men in the for me or through me space. For me, getting to a place where you feel like you deserve, you know, whatever it is, healthy relationship, or you deserve, you know, to be a part of something bigger than you, whatever it is. And then through me, that it's not even about you, that there's stuff happening that is greater than you, and that you are a conduit, you're a catalyst. And I think men who maneuver on a for me, through me, and men who respond instead of react, they have the ability to put that emotional speed bump and being aware, being metacognitive, being aware that whatever they say or do is going to affect other people and caring about that. And then men who try to understand before trying to be understood. Like if you just took those concepts, that, I mean, I was none of those things, you know, my 20s and 30s. It wasn't until like 35-ish that I turned the corner. But there's very few of those in general, but even when it comes to Asian men, probably less so because of our culture.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, no, the having the four stages is a really cool way for those who maybe need that framework to say, oh, maybe I am sort of in this part of the spectrum and this is a way to move forward. But I wonder, like, because I come from a very like left-brained, almost logical side, going into technology, being the oldest, you know, in the family, to be that responsible person. And I guess I'm wondering, like, what are those, what, like, how can you really be in that state of being for me and through me? And what does that really mean or look like?
Yeah. And what does it look like for you guys? So Nick and Brandon, with what you guys are doing, do you guys feel like you guys are also on that journey, or do you feel like that happened 100%. A while ago? Yeah.
I'm 100% on that journey. I think I'm for me, and I'm starting to experience the beginning stages through me, because I've realized I might be Taoist in the way I think about the world. I'm actually realizing a spiritual practice and like having these like insights into insight, where it's like, oh, there's a part of me or something that's working through me that is much more capable of like insights than I am just thinking about things. Yeah. And when you start waking up to that, it's like, there's gotta be something happening. There's gotta be something I could tap into. And I think that is the through me realization, right?
Yeah.
So I'm still on the journey myself, but I know I resonate with Victor here. I come from like a very left, like I went to MIT and like, I was taught that like, you know, science is real and religion is not. And then like, you know, I'm also the oldest son. So I had to like have a good career coming up to now. So I think one thing that you said earlier, John, where like, you know, if you have a success trapping, it's sometimes harder to get to these realizations. I think I'm starting to crack this only because I've realized like my success is not because I went to these places and I had this stuff. It's because of what's inside of me and my ability to like tap into greater things, you know? So definitely on the journey myself. I'm not like at the through me stage completely, but I feel like I'm at for me.
Vic, where did you go to school?
I went to the University of Washington in Seattle.
Okay. And then what about you, Brandon? Where'd you go to college, or did you go?
I actually went to UC Riverside down in the desert.
So I went to Cal State Northridge. And I don't know if you guys want to keep me on here, but with Asians. And,
Even more.
I was studying intense because it was during the Northridge quake. But I didn't even apply to UC schools because I knew I wouldn't get in. And so I went to Northridge, man. I remember having a lot of shame and embarrassment about that like as a Korean American, I was going to a Cal State school. Really made me feel, you know, like I was the kid that got held back. But anyway, what about you, Brandon? Where are you at as far as the stages in your journey?
Man, this past year has been nuts. I am in the through me now. I understand my importance that things are happening through me, because I definitely grew up without a dad in the victim. Like, this happened to me because I didn't have a dad. Right. I had to work through so much of that, like my own prison, right? Find the bars of my own cage. And then he actually passed away this past year. And, you know, that combined with COVID and several psychedelic experiences, I had to realize, like, I am here to do something, but I can't do it alone. I need to receive from other people. And it's not just about me. There's something bigger going on that I'm not the reason that it's happening, but it's happening through me.
Have you done ayahuasca?
I have not.
Okay. But you've done it.
I have done DMT, and I've done 5-MeO-DMT, the toad venom ceremony. You heard of that?
It's I've heard about that.
Was that
life-changing for you or no?
100%. I actually got this crazy vision when I had it, where like I was riding this cloud, and I was riding a cloud in this like intergalactic sky where there was like a bunch of guys raising up behind me. And I had a vision of like helping men support. Like I had a vision basically that's coming true right now, like being part of BAD and like trying to like do all these things to like help my fellow men around me kind of understand that like there's a better way to be. My main thing was like realizing almost every guy in my life that I talk to has been very painful to women in their life. And like, I know I've had moments where I'm like that, but to some of what they were doing, I found repulsive, but I still wanted to like be friends with them and try to help them out of that sort of stuff. So the Toad Venom ceremony really like helped crystallize that as something I find very important. I want to have something be meaningful in my life, which is part of why this conversation has been really great too. Because like, I really appreciate what you wrote in your book, John. There's a lot in there that I find deeply meaningful and I resonate a lot with.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Actually, I'm curious. Like, have you had any psychedelic experiences, John?
I want to do ayahuasca. I want to do the toad thing. I'm a little scared, but I want to do it. I've been asked probably over, you know, 6 times to do it, and I think I will. I tried mushrooms, stuff like that. But no, I haven't. And I also, a therapist are now, I guess, illegally using MDMA in sessions and doing like 3-hour sessions and stuff, which is, you know, the mad scientist in me is fascinated by that. So I'm curious to see how it all emerges. I'm fascinated by anything where the experience changes your lenses. To me, that's amazing.
Yeah. The MDMA shouldn't be illegal for long, right? Like that's hitting phase 3 clinical trials. They should be able to get it to the point where you can do like it's going to be Schedule 3 substance. So you can do it where you can prescribe it, but we're basically able to use it in practice if you're a therapist in the next couple of years. Right. It should be legal in 2021.
Man, there's so much change happening in the world. It's like crazy. I come from pagers and like,
I had a pager.
Right. Yeah. And this is common language, Zoom, and you know, it's fucking nuts, but exciting.
Where, to that point, actually, where do you see, so I guess in that through me journey, what do you feel like is coming through you right now, John?
Wow. So I don't think that it's a consistent thing, right? If anyone tells you that, you know, they're in that through me state for 100% of it, right. I mean, I think that's ego and stuff. I think it kind of hits us in moments, you know? And we could also be predominantly in kind of a for me or through me stage, but also have days where we feel like a victim, or days that our ego kicks in and we're, you know, running our company with an iron fist or whatever. That just means we're human. But like, what's the frequency that you predominantly, live on? So for me, I think it comes in moments. So it started when I was working in nonprofit, and you know, I was making 30 grand a year. I was embarrassed to work there. Also not a lot of Koreans, in the trenches, khakis, you know, I dropped 60K for a master's and, here the universe threw me into nonprofit. It wasn't my idea of what a therapist looked like. I wanted to be Dr. Drew. You know, I wanted to be the guy with the beautiful office and the latte and the BMW and all of that. But in nonprofit, and I also didn't want to work with kids. And I was working with teenagers, all addicts. But I was running groups. And this is where I started to feel something greater than me, because we'd have an hour and a half group. I had no idea what the fuck I was doing. I almost felt possessed. There's a lot of like flow state happening where you're so present, channeling something, whether it's creative energy or something greater, where I would run a group and I would say things without even knowing what I would be saying, set up things, pay them off, spin plates, you know, have people laughing, crying. And I remember driving home and feeling this weird, like possession, that wasn't me. That was bigger than me. Like, how did I learn to do that? And those moments came often in nonprofit. And for me, it was those moments that made me realize I was supposed to be there. And that was the birth of my first book. And that's where I developed this idea of containers. And I applied a lot of that learning to myself as I was going through my rebirth. But yeah, those are my early moments of feeling a through me state. And so now I feel it sporadically, you know, in things I do. Yeah.
No, and I think that is important to recognize too, that like, this is not the end or like destination to just be through me all the time, right?
No, that's impossible, man.
Yeah. And I think it's a really cool comparison that you make in terms of flow state in that sense, where it just like, it just naturally happens. And you're like, oh, wow, I didn't even know that was, you know, in me. Like something came about in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was really cool to hear.
Brandon's picking up his cane.
Well, I one thing I connected with was the minute you mentioned CrossFit and physical suffering and just understanding, that has been a huge catalyst for me. And I wanted to ask you what part that played in your rebirth and transformation.
Yeah, so I believe that self-betterment sometimes is more about a reunion than anything else. And I believe that as we grow up and become adults, we have to take care of people. We, you know, pay taxes, get married, have kids, whatever. And we lock parts of ourselves away into a hope chest. And so for me, CrossFit wasn't about like the workouts or aesthetics. You know, that might have been something that drew me in. But the reason why CrossFit was so therapeutic for me was because when I think about when I felt the most alive, it was when I was 12 in the 80s, Windbreaker, Fat Laces, breakdancing, right? I felt the most freedom. I felt alive. I just, you know, that's very John Kim. And then I gave that all away because I had to grow up. And the gymnastic movement, so the butterfly pull-ups, handstand push-ups, the muscle ups, dude, that tapped me back. I just felt like I was 12 again. Yes. And then, you know, and then across you blast that music and you're shirtless and stuff. So like, as I was doing that stuff, man, I just heard like the Rocky theme song in the background. And I got addicted to that. And so I would come 2-3 times a day chasing that whiteboard and just really trying to redefine myself. And also I was obsessed with, because I was, I played football in high school, but I didn't never play it. I was a bench warmer. I was the kid with the whitest uniform. And I know CrossFit attracts a lot of athletes. And so something shifted in me where I was like, I have a false belief that I'm not an athlete, you know? Although I've been athletic, like skated, but I've never been an athlete, right? I was the guy on the bench watching all the first string people. And so CrossFit gave me a chance to get on the field again, you know? So, I became like a basement guy. You guys ever see Iron Man? I don't know which one it was, but Iron Man is now successful. And he's tap dancing and he's got the Audi, the R8, and he's successful. It's like a parade going on. And then you pan down into the basement and you see this guy with long hair who's creating these electronic whips. And he's doing pull-ups. You know when this guy surfaces, like shit's going to go down, right? And I love that because I'm like, you know what? I love Iron Man, but I'm like, be the basement guy.
Be the basement guy.
And so for those like 3 or 4 years, I was that guy. So I did that in CrossFit, came home and just would blog my ass off. And I know, Nick, you work at Medium, which is great. Mm-hmm. I blog a lot on Medium, but at that time it was Tumblr. And I was like the basement guy. I would write and answer questions and just be, you know, really like in that kind of flow state, playing with my Legos. Just for hours, man, getting lost in the world of self-development.
Awesome. I appreciate that about you, that you felt compelled to push content out just because, and that's why we're having this conversation, because it reached me, Victor and Nick, somehow it touched us. So.
And it was different then because I had no plans of, I don't even know if it was called content. It was called a blog and it was just a digital diary. And I did it because, again, connecting to the screenwriter that I locked away, right? It's a new type of writing, and I was writing for me instead of, you know, trying to sell something. And that was very through me, right? It was me expressing my feelings, my state, and helping other people through my story. It wasn't something I was getting paid for. It was something I was just very passionate about. And I had moments where, you know, 4 or 5 hours would go by, and I would just, you know, like, whoa, you know? And I knew that meant that something is happening, to keep listening to that. So I was in coffee shops just blogging away, you know, probably like 5,000 blogs or something. And, that started everything. That's how I got, you know, followers, questions, and then, you know, public practice and book deals and all that. If it wasn't for that, I don't know what I'd be doing right now.
No, and I love that you know, it started from you wanting to express that. I love the one of the structures you use. I don't know if it's a structure, but my fucking feelings, where you
my very first post.
Yeah, and it was just so raw and authentic, and I think that's a lot of what created that attraction. But I actually am curious that, you know, it started from that, and then I found one of your blogs and it started, you know, following your journey more. And now we're here. Like, what do you make of that? You know what I mean? Like how does that all kind of connect for you?
It makes sense to me. You know, it makes sense to me that like, that I all I was doing was talking about my feelings and how I was going through a broken heart. And also being Korean American, you know, and kind of opening up, maybe people weren't used to, and then documenting whether it's CrossFit or getting my first tattoo or my Harley or whatever, and talking about love and healthy love and unhealthy love. Mm. And then,
and especially as an Asian man. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I maybe you guys can relate to this, but my parents, you know, slept in different rooms. Like I've never seen my mom and dad kiss. I know they had sex twice at least, you know, but, dude, everything was a joke. Like if they never romantic, never holding hands. I just, that's what I grew up with. And I didn't want that for myself. So I think it's interesting that, when you are in a solid state or you try to live there, and you try to live, in a way that's honest to you, you try to live a through me life and think that there are greater things happening. And you kind of let go of the rock and lean into your fears, then this kind of stuff happens where it's like, you know, in my kitchen creating, the Callus Intensive, because I thought there was a better way to help people, cause I didn't have a good experience in grad school. And then, you know, that's where I met Vic and then Victor now being a part of this, but also all the other stuff that you're doing and how it kind of, you know, threads in and out and there's a nice flow to it. So it's, I just feel like this is what life's about if you are living on that plane, you know?
Yeah. It's super cool to hear.
Yeah. Sure. It brings me joy. It brings me hope, man. It makes me believe like, there is setup and payoff. There is things that are happening that we can't see, you know, and there are something greater. And then when you actually believe that, because most people don't believe anything they don't see, then it's just easier to wake up in the morning and go do your thing, you know? Yeah.
Actually, that does make me think about maybe another way to look at that through me state is that there are lots of impacts or effects in that ripple that you might not see, you know?
Like
so many of us try to create or do things and want to see results from it like immediately or like see that direct impact. But sometimes we have to disconnect or detach ourselves from having that result.
Someone's going to listen to this episode and relate to one of our stories and they may be in a dark place and it's going to shift something in them, you know?
I bet a lot of people, right? Because COVID happened. And I know personally for me, when I was like living that fast and kind of loose life in New York City, having a ton of fun, I wouldn't have connected with that or like this Asian group circle if COVID hadn't happened because I was just like too distracted with what was going on in New York City, you know? So I'm actually really thankful that like this happened to me in my life because I feel like, I don't think like, I'm starting to approach more the through me state and like right now I feel a little bit of through me happening for sure. Yeah, this conversation between the four of us. I don't think I really experienced that much in work that much. And like, I'm starting to feel it back in it now, being able to take back some of the concepts I've learned about emotional intelligence there. And it's great. I'm really glad COVID happened to disrupt my life and get me a chance to like open up to something more meaningful like this.
Yeah. Are you now working mostly from home? I'm assuming.
I am working completely work from home. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. It's been good.
Yeah. COVID's shaking everything up for everyone. I mean, there are, you know, divorces happening now. There are,
right.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I think the COVID is, forcing us to sit with ourselves and we're either going to run toward or run away. And if you're going to run away, it's going to harden you. And if you run toward, it's going to soften you. And I don't mean soften in as in a weakness way. I mean, speaking of badass Asian men, I think men who are soft, men who are sweet are badass.
Yeah.
You had an expression, right? Like soft belly, hard back. Is that what you said?
Oh yeah.
I like that.
Buddhism, right? Yeah.
The Buddhism expression. Yeah. I like that expression a lot.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's very tangible. And before we got on with you, we were talking about how there's a street cred relatability to you that you don't use any fluffy language. You don't use any kind of new agey. You're just kind of like very direct and to the point, which I think is a great way to communicate about very difficult subjects like this, which.
Yeah, people started saying that that they resonate with me bringing things to street level, but it's nothing that I never sat down and said, okay, what's my brand? What's going to be my dude, I'm a C student and going through school and learning dense concepts in my master's program, I knew that I could never help someone unless I really kind of like John Kim'd it, dumbed it down, brought it, you know, what does it really mean? How can we apply this to life? Because therapy and self-betterment can be very, very out there, very, very philosophical, very theory driven, you know? And for me, it would just be copy and paste and I wouldn't be able to be effective. And so early on, I was like, okay, let's take something like Pseudo versus Solid by you know, Marty Bowen, and this idea of differentiation of self and all of that. And what does that mean? How can I bring it down and help my clients, you know? And so that was all my writing was, you know. You know who else did that? You know who's the grandfather of this is like Bruce Lee. Mm. Like, how do you get more simple than Be Like Water? You know?
Like,
yeah. Yeah, and he definitely is a badass Asian guy, but not because it's not because he could fight. Like, it had nothing to do with martial arts. For me, Bruce Lee was like, at that time, I think he married a Caucasian, right? He married a Caucasian girl, which was, you know, frowned upon. She didn't do that. Came to America, was successful, started his own methodology as far as martial arts. And then his philosophy, his life philosophy, that's what I'm like, wow, this guy can really simplify things. Yeah.
And it was super highly developed too, right? He had a massive library where he had all sorts of philosophy, martial arts, and all sorts of books in there, but he was still able to like realize the most important thing you can do with that knowledge is distill it into something that is immediately do not try. All these like random things that like you like hear about, but you immediately get when you are in the right stage of life and listen to it, right?
Yeah.
He's so good with his quotes.
Yeah. I have racist friends that call me Jackie Chan. And I'm like, if you're going to call me Jackie Chan, just call me Bruce Lee. They're like, no, you don't look like Bruce Lee.
I mean, Jackie Chan's also badass. But,
yeah.
He Bruce does Lee, his own stunts. That dude is nuts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, I mean, and thank you for coming on, for being another badass Asian dude to really like, you know, talk more about that from an internal sense too. I think we need more people. Like we talk about Bruce Lee, but that was like multiple years ago.
Yeah.
You know, much respect for what he's done. But I think, you know, we got to continue that momentum.
Yeah. And pass the baton.
Yes.
You're alive too. Yeah. So you're, we can dialogue with you. Like, unfortunately, we can't talk to Bruce Lee. We can only engage with what he left behind, right? His legacy.
This is a hologram. I died 2 years ago. I pulled a Thelma and Louise off.
This is a deep fake of John Kim.
Yeah, it's actually really highly artificially intelligent. It was great.
Yeah. No, thank you guys for creating this dialogue. I think it's important. Also, thank you for calling me a badass. I don't see myself that way.
We definitely see it that way.
I love what you guys are doing, man. It's really cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to say to an Asian kid who wants to, maybe not even kid, Asian man who wants to be more badass, who wants to live a through me life? Like what would be any last words that you'd like to share with
them? Oh man, there's so many, but if I was to pick one, you know, the one that I always go to just because it's something I used to do was I used to exchange my truth for membership a lot. And I think as an Asian American, that could happen in so many ways, you know, from parents to who you should be, what school you should go to, the grades you should have, all of that. So I would say never, never exchange your truth for membership. And so whether membership is, you know, to a club or to whatever, or if membership is you taking on your parents' definitions, right? Don't exchange your truth, you know? Stand on your truth. That's something I would leave with.
I love that quote. I know that we all want to keep having this conversation. I actually don't know what your timeline is like, but you know, when you brought that up, actually that was one of those quotes and questions we wanted to expand on, in that it's such a hard hitting thing, you know. I don't know. Yeah. Would you have time to really expand on that?
Yeah, absolutely. In my 20s, in the restaurant bar club world. So it was a kind of like a high end supper club, that basically my parents, you know, had a little like hot dog hamburger shack, saved up money for 10 years, bought a Pioneer Chicken in Long Beach that turned to a Popeye's Chicken. And then we sold that and we took all our savings and bought this little Italian restaurant in Hollywood that catered to post-production. The nights were dead because Hollywood wasn't cool like it was now. And then I met a promoter and he's like, I could blow your place up. It's amazing. And I was like, really? And he's like, yeah. And so he did it. And within 3 months, it like blew up where there's 400 people waiting outside. It was only celebrities, models, all that, super high end. And at that time, I started to exchange my truth for membership, you know, and we had this deal where he was going to front the club where he pretended like he owned it. So I was the dude, you know, washing dishes in the back, and he would roll up like, you know, with the, you know, the models and the fancy cars and all that. I mean, it was kind of like the hip hop videos back in 2001, you know? And I remember just watching him thinking like, oh, you know, I want to be that guy, and I'm willing to exchange, you know, my truth or who I am to get it. And of course that is living outside in instead of inside out. So after my divorce, one of the things that I made a promise to myself is, I'm not going to exchange my truth for membership. I don't need to be a part of any club if it requires me to sell my soul, you know? And so it happened to me in therapy where I was leading toward working in a high-end residential treatment centers where I got paid a lot, you know, but I had to wear slacks and tuck my shirt in and do things that were very conventional. And I remember this one time I was working at a high-end eating disorder treatment center, and she was doing so well. These centers make millions, right? And she was kind of like Darth Vader. Everyone's scared of her, and you know, they don't want to lose their job. And I rolled up on my little Ducati Monster with DVDs, and I wanted to play movies as interventions for the groups, for the eating disorder patients. And I got fired for it. And I thought to myself, this is the universe telling me that you don't belong here and you need to do your own thing. And again, that's when I kept feeding the angry therapist. I don't want to exchange my truth for membership anymore. You know, it grays you out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that hits me because it applies in so many ways, right? Where I might have found myself doing that, trying to see, you know, trying to be this image of what was cool or like the popular kid in, you know, other places, or try to be this expressive person, maybe a loud person when maybe that's not me.
Yeah.
You know, just so I could, you know, get plugged into what I had deemed a higher status or whatnot. So
yeah. Membership can also be love. Membership can also be you know, a girl or a guy or what, like it could be a lot. It doesn't just mean society, but yeah, it could be anything, man. It could be a fancy job, whatever.
Makes me think also, like, some people get this innately where it's like, don't try to change people, just like accept them where they are and see what we can do about it. And some people like, it sounds like the Darth Vader person you were talking about, her whole life belief is around like controlling people and like making them fit a certain mold. And like, you only get to get in if you sell part of yourself.
So she was in a buy me state.
Yeah.
Iron fist, man. People were terrified of her. Yeah. And you know what? She was probably really lonely too and unhappy, but
you know, I wonder if there's people out there listening right now, like some people in the back of me, maybe, who are like, there was a story that really resonated with me in your book. It was a story about a super successful startup founder who had a perfect family. Everything was perfect on the outside, but he was coming to you saying he was deeply unhappy and it was depressed. I remember in the book, you were talking about how he had to figure out that the reason he was so unhappy, and it actually turns out his entire life, nobody really like wanted to be around it, was because he's super mental.
Right.
He was very much in a buy-me state, right? Like, how can you tell when you're like in that version of a state versus like further along, or like instead of in a to me, like in a further state to buy me and for me, maybe through me, how do you know where you are? How do you get a sense for like where you are? So do you think like people just know when listening to this where they are in those stages? Or do you think there needs a little bit of a guide?
I don't think, you know, I don't think it's written on the wall. I think it's something that is a practice. Like you have to drop in to yourself. You got to check in. You have to really be honest with yourself. And I think it's blurry. I think a lot of times we don't know, you know, also examining what's happening in your life. You know, are you happy? I don't think it's something where it's like, you know, you just know, or that it hits you maybe, you know.
So that comes back to like mindfulness, meditation, like making space for yourself to really listen on what's going on deeper inside.
Yeah. And I think we're such logical creatures. I think we live in our heads, and I think a more powerful radar is our body. And it's only in the last maybe 5 years that I've even been exploring what it looks like or feels like to check in, to drop in. What do I feel? And using words like soul, energy, intuition. Those were words that I thought were hokey and stupid, you know. Everything either made sense or didn't make sense. Everything either I see, I believe, or I don't see it, I don't believe it. And now I think that's in the backseat. And what rides shotgun for me is how do I want to feel?
Yeah.
You know,
that is the power I've experienced with a lot of people have, with psychedelics. It stops your mind.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Overthinking. Yeah. And it's like, how do you actually feel? Like, I don't feel good about that. That's enough of a sign, right? You just don't feel good.
Right.
Or you're like, that makes me feel good.
Right.
Yeah.
That is another lead. Right.
Right.
Yeah, maybe we have to go on a retreat with you, John, and
the bad retreat. I see that. Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
You guys need to make some jackets, man.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. A little branded.
Yeah. Yeah. John, send you one for riding, dude.
Oh, that'd be sick.
We'll send you one so you can ride on your motorcycle.
Yeah.
With.
Yeah. No, I really think you guys should definitely do some kind of retreat. That hangs on all of this and giving other Asian men experience. Maybe that retreat is a version of that initiation thing, or that the not initiation. What were you saying?
What did I say?
A rite of passage.
Rite of passage. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And it could be our guest speaker, John.
I'll be there. Whatever you guys want. I mean, it could come in the form of adventure and dirt bikes and lifting and all that. Right?
Yeah. So, that's stuff, man.
With mushrooms and psychedelics.
Yeah,
there you go.
So we have talked about doing this.
Like
a plant medicine based trip. So this is amazing that you're like, this would be a great day. We're like, wait, we think so too. Anyway, this sounds like a really great thing to explore.
You guys should definitely do that. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for having me. Are you guys on Instagram?
We're not on Instagram. A bunch of us individually, but not the Badass Asian Dudes. We will be starting up a YouTube channel and but the Facebook group as well is already happening. So thank you again for coming on. I know we could definitely continue this for hours, but how could people find you if they want to read up on your content or
just at The Angry Therapist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Awesome. All right, guys. All right. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much, John.
Thanks,
John.
Stay
badass. Be well.
Thanks.
Bye.
Well, thank you all for listening. I think he just dropped out there, but really appreciate you all for listening to this episode. And again, mad props for John Kim for coming on here to share this story and all those nuggets of information. Any of you want to end with any closing thoughts, or maybe we can actually spend a couple minutes for some reflection if that would make sense?
Yeah,
sure.
You want to go, Brandon?
I mean, the best thing that I can say about, just chatting with him is like having someone just a little bit older down the journey a little bit to just remind you like, hey, it's going to be okay. Just keep doing the thing that you're unsure about, because anybody older than us has no idea what's really going on. And I like to hear that confirmed every once in a while. I don't like when people say, I'm older than you, I know things about the world. Right. And I'm like, I'm good.
Yeah.
And
I did like how real he is in that, right? Like, it's just like, I was a therapist and I am a coach and I've done all these things, but also there's still so much to explore and I'm also not perfect.
I think there was something really refreshing about his approach to life too, where it's like, trust it when you feel that truth coming out, and like build on that truth, like do the work and take it one step at a time while you're doing it, and like you will be able to figure things out, but it has to come from the right place, right? Mm-hmm. And I think really talking about the through me really resonated, and there's just so much in that conversation. I really, really enjoyed it. So had a great time on that. I would love to talk to you again. But yeah.
Well, awesome. If you had enjoyed this episode, please do share this with somebody who could benefit from it, or that you'd love to use this as a starting point for a conversation you'd like to have. But also just tell others about it and join us on our Facebook group, Badass Asian Dudes. You can just search through Facebook as well. And with that, again, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Peace.